Welcome, everybody, to another very special edition of Such Good Shoot. Today, I, Isaac, am here interviewing a true legend in the business, Barry Horowitz. We'll give him a pat on the back here. We are truly, truly honored to have you here. I don't think people, especially these days, younger fans don't recognize just the list of talent that you made look incredible with your hard work and your in-ring ability. Getting ready for this, I watched a Jim Cornette interview, and one of the things that he said was that you were so good in ring that they just kept using you to make other people look good. And by the time they realized how good that you actually were, they had already sort of dug themselves a grave with this and like put you in a place where it was hard to like recover in the eyes of the public at that time.
Yeah. Well, first, Isaac, thanks for that great, humbling, warm welcome. I appreciate it very much. I love your show and I'm glad to be a part of it. And yeah, I guess I'm AKA Star Maker, as Tim Horner once put it.
I like that.
But that's
like
okay that. Because think about what I'm about to say, and I've said this on many interviews. There's got to be a winner and a loser in all walks of life. Mike Tyson loses, Patriots lose, everybody loses. I mean, you got your bad guys, your good guys. So my dream is to be a pro wrestler. Not everybody could be a top flight, a top shelf guy. And some of them really shouldn't be, but that's the politics of the business.
Warrior.
Warrior. Yeah. Yeah. People who run to the ring and shake the top rope, wear face paint and don't know a wrist lock from a wristwatch. Yeah, exactly. In today's world, he wouldn't get over at all. They would, in Japan, they would send him back home overnight.
And people talk about Hogan, but like even when Hogan went and worked in Japan, he worked really hard, and if you don't, you're gonna get your ass kicked.
You got that right. And I was brought to All Japan because I was a technical wrestler.
Yeah.
I mean, and what I want to back up the ship a little bit when you it's where they dug their hole so deep. You know what? Especially WWE, but any company, you could undig that hole too.
Yeah.
I've seen the Lanny Poffo, nothing against him, but did nothing. Next day's the genius. Boom. Come on.
But those ones never stuck. But yes, I see they can strap a rocket to whoever they want.
They can. And I think what they saw was this guy doesn't give us a hard time. It's not that I don't give a crap attitude. I'm a professional.
Yep.
And true professionals understand the nature of sports entertainment. If they don't, they need to sign up with, UFC and get their ass beat and stretched in about 10 seconds, preferably by Brock Lesnar.
Oh, God. I got to say, he's one of the people, and I get a lot of shit from this from some friends, but Brock Lesnar is one of those guys that still to this day, he's just anybody who talks shit about him, anyone talks shit about like the fact that, oh, he's going over as a monster is out of their mind, because put anyone in the world against him in a real fight and he's going to win most of the time. Unless it's somebody who's like absolutely trained to like do that, but the last UFC fight he lost was 6 months after his diverticulitis surgery.
Yeah.
He had it like 15 inches of his intestines removed, and 6 months later he got a kicked as hard as he could in the chest and it took him down.
Yeah.
So like, but that motherfucker, like, he's tougher than nails and he's huge and he draws and he's believable. And he's one of these guys that's truly believable.
He's the only guy that should have defeated The Undertaker, and that would have been his only loss. And legit, and it was believable, credible, and acceptable.
It's a great moment. I jumped out of my seat, man. I'm one of the few people that lost my mind.
But when it comes to true professionalism, there is some guys, I just don't care. And then there's being a pro. And the ultimate pro, I mean, I think I'm up there in the upper echelon as far as being an upper pro, not you know, not trying a pro, not trying to put myself over, but is Kurt Angle.
God, and what a worker,
I mean, the man was in the
too.
Olympics, a gold Olympic medalist, won it with a broken neck.
Yes.
The guy looks, walks, and talks. And by the way, he is the real total package.
He's incredible. I mean, even from day one, he was wrestling way above. I mean, he hadn't been training that long for professional wrestling.
He adapted within a year to promos, everything about him, because most amateurs, including myself, Bob Backlund, Brad Rangins, they don't get over and adapt that quick. Kurt Angle is, I mean, and he's an Olympic gold medalist. Nobody does that. I mean, I'd have him on my roster permanently. Permanently on the payroll.
He was, but anyway, for any purpose.
If you see some of the people he put over and whatnot, it's all being a professional. There's nothing wrong with that. It's the way you do it. And if guys think they're better than you, or they look down, or they take their gimmick home, you know what? They're a mark for themselves. And guess what? It's unacceptable and it's dangerous.
And I feel like that's pretty prevalent. I mean, maybe not quite as much these days, but I mean, you know, in the days of kayfabe, especially, like, you kind of had to take that home with you in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
Because anywhere you were seen, but the guys who are doing it now, you know, like, I get it on social media, like, I get living your gimmick there, but like, there comes to like we know, everyone knows that it's, you know, like it's a work. So like,
right.
how do you change people's ability to believe something when they already know it's a work?
Well, you don't have to, because today's society and today's wrestling fans, the smart marks, and I give that in a all honesty, I mean that with all passion, they're smart to the business and they respect it. They're not wise guys. They're like the ultimate fans that come out of Tokyo in Japan, and they know what's going on. And if you try to BS them, you're going to get heat from the marks. So don't do that. You don't have to tell them deep, dark secrets, but if they're humbling and they're proper to you, if they're degrading and disrespectful, I don't have time for people like that. I kayfabe them, I ignore them, or I'll cut a promo on them. I don't care. And it's not like I'm trying to be a tough guy or anything, but it's disrespectful. I get more disrespect sometimes from the so-called boys because of jealousy, or he's going to take my spot. Well, then maybe you should up your game, Jabron.
Well, I mean, I feel like that's the thing is, like, you know, you talk about professionalism and, you know, especially at the time that you were, you know, had your run in WWF, like the people, there just seemed like there was so much bullshit backstage. It's well documented. Everyone knows that, like, there's cliques and there's factions and there's people using whatever methods they can to manipulate, you know, to get their spot, which, you know, like when you're talking about huge amounts of money, I mean, I get why it is, but at the same time, it ends up hurting the people who genuinely work their hardest and do the right thing and get to that spot. And sometimes those people shine through, but a lot of times they just get missed.
You know, if people would just, you know, I see a lot of pro football players and just go out there and have fun. You know, they say it a lot, but in the wrestling business, the same thing. Don't worry about who's bigger, who's this, who's that. Team effort, but it's not a team effort in pro wrestling. I've wrestled amateur quite a few years, not as long as pro. I paid my dues in amateur, and so have other guys, but it's a team effort. In pro wrestling, you want a friend, buy a dog.
I mean, you know? Yeah, it kind of feels that way.
And these are so-called friends. I call them acquaintances, nothing against them, but I remember back in the day, just, I don't know what the jealousy thing is. And this, what you need to do is have fun. Don't worry about the other guy. Mind your own business and get the match over. And when I mean get the match over, I don't mean hurry up and go back to the locker room. Get the match over.
Get people excited, man. Yeah.
See, me and Owen Hart always believed in that. I've wrestled different guys like him and Brad Armstrong, Tommy Wildfire Rich, Tom Zink, There's quite a handful of guys that were similar to me, my passion and the technical wrestling of it. Brady Boone, these guys.
Can I bring up a name?
What's that?
Can I bring up a name to add to that? Because I just talked to him a couple
sure,
days ago.
Please,
Alan
please.
Funk. Alan Funk.
Alan Funk. I was just doing a program with him. 2 weeks later, Vince buys WCW and doesn't make me part of it when I've been loyal to him and his father.
Yeah.
I guess maybe I need to have a fight on a plane and then you'll promote me.
Yeah, or God, you know, just
do you know, some gimmicks.
Sleep with the daughter. You have all sorts of options.
or fail some drug tests, get on the gimmicks, wreck a car, drive a school bus. What else can we do today? I like tribal makers, really?
Yeah.
I like guys that are not on gimmicks, show up hard, train, and we're going to have fun in that ring. That's why I had so much fun with Owen Hart.
And you put on great matches with him. I mean, even when you couldn't wrestle, you know, under your normal style, when you were wrestling him at Survivor Series, you know, with the hood on
as the Red Knight.
You know, even then, like that was, I mean, those guys and wrestling guys who didn't wrestle much at that point, you know, was it Bruce or something? I mean, it was two of the brothers that don't wrestle much. And
it didn't matter in that situation.
But they were all just like, you know, all of those guys are obviously so good. But the thing one of the things that stood out from that match was just how incredible the commentary was with Bobby Heenan at that point. And just how, I mean, he just had me laughing consistently throughout the whole match. He's just so quick and funny. But yeah, all the work in that, even with Stu Hart out at the ringside and, you know, like Sean causing trouble, the guy from Family Feud at, you know,
Ray Combs.
Yeah, introducing everybody and then doing, you know, commentary with it. It was just it was a fun match. But
I was happy to be proud of it. It was the main event, all because Terry Funk's horse was sick.
An incredible excuse. I mean, it probably is true, too.
That horse must be worth a lot of money, don't care. Because, I mean, we're looking at a guy that's an icon in the wrestling business and been the NWA World Heavyweight Champion when it counted. Back in the days of Jack Briscoe, Flair, Harley Race, come on.
Yeah. Oh, he was great. That's amazing. And then even still, and then like to have the match still happen after whatever happened with Jerry Lawler happened and he ends up getting
something illegal.
Yeah. Which is, And then, then it ends up being Shawn Michaels and that goes on to be an incredible rivalry between him and Bret Hart. But speaking of Bret Hart, were you billed as Bret Hart at one point?
Yeah.
Can you talk about that? Cause I can't find anything about that. All I see is like ring names. And then you have Bret Hart and you have Barry Hart, which I get. But were you part of the Hart family at a point? Like an extended cousin?
I came in as Barry Hart because Malenko, by the way, you know, the great Malenko, the Malenko's trained me.
I was going to actually ask about Boris and training with him.
It's phenomenal. The best. I mean, without going on a tangent here.
Tangent away,
I mean, after I see how people get broken in and so forth, and I'm sure there's great coaches out there, but I'm sorry, maybe I am biased, maybe because he's Jewish, I'm Jewish. I don't know, and I don't really care. He's the best. He's the best.
Well, I'm Jewish too, and I'm going to agree with you.
All right, a tribalman.
Shalom, excellent. Man.
Yes.
Yeah, we had Mark Mero on, and he was talking about how he got trained down there and what an incredible experience it was. And then anytime he got to see Dean or Joe come in, and like it was just like watching like just magic in the ring.
Oh, definitely. They're super shooters, by the way. I mean, Jody Malenko lived with Carl Gotch for years being trained every day.
Wow.
But yeah, I mean, the training was phenomenal. The dues paying was phenomenal of 18 months. I was so happy that I was broken in that way and not just wham, bam, you know, you're training 3 months and let you go. There's just no way. You can't build. The only thing I built in that 18 months was a foundation. The rest I got polished on the road, traveling with the likes of Steamboat, Youngblood, Mike Rotundo, I mean, Rufus R. Jones, Jimmy Valiant. Sonny Fargo, Greg Valentine, Bob Orton Jr. I mean, come on.
And then you even got to work with guys like managers like Percy Pringle, or you know, otherwise known as Paul Bearer, who is
Hall of Famer. Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
Humperdinck, yeah, another one.
Paul Heyman.
You worked with Dangerously. Paulie Dangerously too, huh? Back, yep. God, man. Like, those guys all very, very good at what they do.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. And that's anytime you get to work with people who are that, like, good, that's such a great experience in that, you know, once you have that foundation built to, like, get the rest of that building up.
Oh, yeah, without a doubt. So we were, I forgot, we were talking about Malenko, and then you went into something. We got sidetracked, sorry.
I got sidetracked by Boris Malenko. Yeah, that was my one. I got sidetracked by. I don't even remember where we were before that, which doesn't really matter. But okay. How did you get into that school? Because I'm on.
Oh, wait a minute.
Oh yes, I'm sorry. Remember.
Yes, you were talking about I was just reading that on the screen there. Something said.
You're good.
We were talking about how the Bret Hart name came.
Yes, sorry. Yes, absolutely. Okay. Oh, good, because I didn't want to. I do want to catch up on that.
Yeah. So Vince Sr. was sending me to Portland for Don Owens through Jimmy Snuka, but the territory was full. So Vince called Jim Crockett Sr. and got me booked in Charlotte for Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, which was the greatest move as far as getting polished, because it was a high spot territory. It was a babyface territory, working six nights a week for 2 years. Everybody that was anybody went through there. You know, it was big for Flair and Steamboat and Youngblood and Bugsy McGraw and Jimmy Valiant and Terry Gibbs. Everybody was there, and it really helped. So when I first got there, I drove to a TV studio. That's where they film TV. And I walk in there and I'm new. And I'm pretty sure it was Michael P.S. Hayes was one of the bookers. And I'm pretty sure it was his idea. You know, we got Gary Hart as a heel manager, and you're Barry Hart, which Malenko gave my name. And it's a heel and a baby. And it mattered in those days. Now it doesn't. So we need to change you to, we're going to call you Bret Hart. Now, I don't know there's a Bret Hart. I'm happy. I'm 21. I'm doing this for a living. I'm going up and down the roads with Johnny Weaver and Roddy Piper and a plethora of other stars. And okay, great. Thanks, you know, and it was cool. And I think I spelled it Bret instead of Brett. Or is it flip-flop? I don't remember how Brett spells his name. But anyway, I got that name. And then I went on to, from there, I went to Florida Championship Wrestling. And there, if I'm not mistaken, again, Michael Hayes, I think, was there. Or Mike Graham changed it to Jack Hart.
Okay.
So, and then when I, fast forwarding, when I first met Brett in the Fed, he shunned me a little bit. Because, you know, he didn't know me, thinks I'm using his name, and then I'm getting beat, and they take that personal. But once he got to know me as a person and as a wrestler, all of a sudden, we shared rooms together on the road, and then I was invited to his house. And I was told back in the day, if you were invited to Brett's house and stay overnight to work the Saddle Dome in Calgary, you're like in there. And I'm going, wow. I mean, I was just doing my thing again,
Being a professional.
And just, you know, just doing my, you know, like Bill Belichick says, do your job.
Yep. Yep.
And that's what I did. So that's how that came about in a short version of the Bret Hart story my name.
So it's just completely coincidental. And then also, like, you get to both of the Bret Harts stand under one roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's wild, man. That's really wild. So you grew up in St. Petersburg area, St. Petersburg or Clearwater?
St. Petersburg, Florida. Amateur wrestled there at a youth center. Went on to junior high and high school. Went to FSU. I wrestled there, but only a year. And I took also sports nutrition as a backup plan.
Yeah.
And I could only stay there a year. Number one, I couldn't afford to. Number two, I had an offer to be trained as a pro. And I'm glad I didn't turn it down, because who knows what would have happened if I would. Yeah, I don't know what would have happened. So
I'm glad you didn't turn that one down either, man.
Yeah, I think I made the right move. I mean, I know some doctors with 8 or 9 years of college and don't know how to say please and thank you because it's common sense. Mm-hmm. So I'd rather have common sense than 9 years of college.
Hey man, I'd rather just know how to be polite to people and be kind. Yeah. And yeah, I'd have any there degree.
Yep.
That's what I think. And do you live in that area? I know you're still in Florida. Are you still in the St. Pete area? Or are you?
No, I moved to the Tampa area.
Gotcha.
Just to get away from St. Pete. My wife's from here. And, I like it a lot. I mean, I'm from Florida. It's really good on my body, the heat and so forth, but it's getting very busy and the laws are, I mean, it's bad everywhere, but some of the crime and the laws are just not controlled. I'm really thinking of going back to my second home, which would be a very small town in Tennessee.
Nice. Nice. That sounds really nice. Get out in the,
yeah,
out
it
in the
is.
Woods, man. Yeah. I was wondering, cause like the first thing that popped up when I thought of St. Pete and Clearwater area is like all the Scientology that goes on there.
And like, they own Clearwater.
I know, man, it's crazy. And as a Jewish person, I just see it. And I'm just like, this is insane to me. Like, it's just insane to me, but like the power that they have in that area is incredible.
Well, they do have power, but I did tell one Scientologist, there's only two kinds of people in this world, sir. Jewish people and people that wish they were Jewish.
Shalom, man. Oh, man. Yeah, I'm gonna have to clip that and send it to my friend Brad because...
Definitely. And if you don't mind, Isaac, why we threw Tennessee in there, a lot of fans don't know this, but... Mr. Technical, Barry Horowitz, was in a 1994 country music video, number one for the year, number one on CMT, number one video for Joe Diffie's Pickup Man. You can see me in there four times, very legible.
Wow.
Because that is my hobby. Love country music. Been to the Opry, been to Elvis's mansion. I just love the music and never used to because I was an 80s rocker, you know, Bon Jovi, Def Leppard, still love it in the gym. But when it comes to chilling, it's all about country. And why? I used to drive in Tennessee for Jarrett Promotions, which, by the way, Jarrett, one of my favorite promoters, top five in my eyes, him and Otto Wants. Unbelievable how they treated me. And it was Mid-South was Jarrett's promotion. Mm-hmm. And I was traveling with Tojo Yamamoto. Okay. So I'd be in his Lincoln with him and sometimes in the back seat, and Sato was in the front seat, and all he would listen to was country, and I hated it. But I traveled with them almost every day, or some shows were short, so I drove myself for about, I was only there maybe less than a year before WWF called me back. They saw me on there. They put the Southern tag belts on me and Chick Donovan in the Memphis Coliseum after defeating Soul Train Jones and Rocky Johnson.
Wow.
So I got hooked on country music because I was listening to it constantly and just, I love it.
Random person to get you hooked on country too. That is the last name you would ever expect. when you're talking country music, man, what are some of your favorites? I mean, you're talking like older school, like Hank Williams.
Everybody. I do. I like old school, new school. I mean, I could go all over the place. Dixie Chicks and Blake Shelton and Alabama and Kenny Chesney, Tim McGraw, the Judds. I like some old stuff. I just can't think of offhand, Barbara Mandrell Reba McEntire.
Oh yeah.
I mean, and country, if you watch their the CMTs and all that, the CMAs and all that, all a class act.
Mm-hmm.
They don't go out of control and make a fool of themselves. I like it. Yeah. It's really a class act. Nice. You know, you got, you know, people, you know, hosting it like Luke Bryan and Carrie Underwood and Jason Aldean and all these people. They're just, in my eyes, they're class acts. So
nice, man. Yeah, I haven't watched. I'm when I get into the country, it's a lot of the Hank Williams Jr., Johnny Cash, a lot of the older stuff, bluegrass.
That.
Yeah, that's my sure. That's my niche. You know, I'm all over the place with music, though.
Oh, I hear you.
So when you finally go back to WWF and you're Barry Horowitz, and now you have like the suspender gimmick, and like where did that come from?
The
patting yourself on the back gimmick, wearing the suspenders, and just like, because you had been working under different gimmicks kind of up until that point for them.
Well, the Barry Horowitz came from Vince. He wanted to use that name. And I said, okay, not a problem. That was fine. But I always had that pat on the back in my back pocket. It happened in an amateur match by accident. I got disqualified. And I always said when I turned pro, because I was so positive, I'm going to be a pro wrestler. I said, I'm going to use that. And I knew it would get over. It's different, especially for a heel before, during, and after the match, as far as before a suplex, after a suplex, congratulate yourself. And awesome. It, you just don't want to overdo it, but you don't want to underdo it either.
Yeah.
And I learned that those little trademarks, those little words I said, a lot from Bob Backlund and Tony Garea.
Nice. Yeah, I was wondering because it felt like a very different departure from the stuff you had been doing up into that point in a lot of ways.
Well, this where I knew where I was. I said, I got to make a big splash. The suspenders just to be different. That's all.
And is that sort of what kept like pushed it towards like the nerd gimmick later down the road was just like that sort of.
Actually, no, I don't know what that was about, but I actually do know it. I think I know what it's about. When certain times, I'm not saying always, but certain times when Vince puts a gimmick on you, it's a shoot. It's like in the past, like you were a dentist or you were a mortician. Let's play off of this. And then some is for laughs behind the scenes or punishment.
Yep.
As far as the Red Rooster, I think that was punishment.
Must have been. Because good Lord.
Well, consider all the people. Source.
Yeah.
And another thing, as far as, you know, and then there's other things that complement stuff. I don't think, you know, like The Undertaker, I think, was Vince's gimmick and idea. So nothing wrong with that. But I think there's different ways and avenues how they do that. Now, they don't understand with Barry Horowitz. I know professional wrestling. Yes, I do care about my career. But the bottom line is I know how to get myself over. I know how to wrestle. I know what to do. You say no, they'll get a replacement. Mm-hmm. You're sitting home and acting like a mark on the couch when you could be making six figures. You're insane.
Yeah.
I just can't conceive that. I can't swallow that. I don't understand that, but there is some guys, you know, I'd rather have the belt and pay me less. I'd rather not have the belt and pay me more because when I go to the bank, Isaac, they don't say, did you win or lose? They say, how much would you like to deposit, Mr. Horowitz?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And like, that's the thing is like, that's the business. It's, you know, it is a work, you know, and if you're getting to the point where you're working yourself, like you were saying earlier, that's a problem. And I think that's something that a lot of people get, like they get so full of themselves and they don't really realize, you know, like, What is like one of Bill Goldberg's best matches is probably the one against William Regal, you know?
I didn't even know that match.
Well, it's the match where, you know, like it's pretty famous because they, you know, he wrestled him and he decided to wrestle Goldberg and test him. And he stretched him out a little bit and really worked him. And it was good because, like, you know, like when you are as good technically as someone, you know, on his level, on your level, when you're working with somebody who is not so great, you can make them look like $1 million, or, you know, like you can, because you can just jump up off the mat whenever you want and be like, yeah, that didn't hurt. You can no sell anytime you want
and destroy their career.
Yeah. I mean, look what happened with a Warrior when he no sold the pedigree from Triple H, you know, like
I didn't know about that.
Yeah, there was a, depending on which documentary you watch that WWE produced, it was either an honor or it was like the worst thing that ever happened to his career, according to Triple H. But yeah, he gives Warrior a pedigree and Warrior literally jumps right back up. And you know, and it just, it's like, oh, okay, I get it. Yeah, this is bullshit. This guy looks like he's, you know, he doesn't know what he's doing now. Like, and you really can.
I've heard a lot of stories in wrestling, you know, telephone, telegraph, telewrestler, where there's smoke, there's fire. I have never heard that story or the one you talked about, Regal and Goldberg.
Well, I'll pull up the match for that one, because the Triple H Ultimate Warrior thing was, let me just make sure. I think maybe 96 WrestleMania, something like that.
Really?
But it was a big match, and I mean, he just buried the hell out of Triple H, you know. And,
wow. Now,
but
something came to my mind about true professionals. I got to throw another one into the mix. Is Sting?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Totally the opposite of his so-called tag team partner, smartened up bodybuilder. That's his new name.
Oh shit, man. Yeah. I, you know, at that point I was never the biggest Sting fan early on, you know, once he went the Crow gimmick, it was, you know, obviously it got more into it, you know, like it just felt kind of forced early on. And then it was like, it also felt very Ric Flair in a lot of ways. And
I think Rick helped him a lot.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, woo.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
I hear you.
And you came in, you worked with, you were in a tag team with Brawler when you came back with Lombardi.
Okay.
And yeah, what was working with the Brooklyn Brawler? Like, he always seems like a really, like, another guy who was a good worker, was, you know, seemed like a professional, but what is your take on him?
I mean, I'm not going to say good worker, not on my level. I'm just calling it like it is. I mean,
please,
substandard. I just remember one time in a match, we were in a tag and he says to me, and I quote unquote, yeah, hey, don't make me look bad and don't try to out wrestle me or don't do a lot of stuff. Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I'm a technical wrestler and I was taught all this, but I'm not holding back for nothing.
Yeah, man. Now, no, you got to get yourself over, man.
Right. Now, if I am told by Vince or Pat Patterson, okay, Barry, we know you could work and this and that, but you know, we need you to do this. And that's another good sign of a true professional and a good versatile wrestler. What do I mean by that? Basically, oh, I can't take that brainbuster. Okay, we'll do a reverse DDT. Oh, I can't take that. Okay, we'll do a side salto. What I'm saying is I could change anything you want. You want me to work your leg, your arm? A good versatile worker will go further. He won't come complacent or stagnated. And he'll get over better because ringside and the cheap seats are going to go, that mofo could wrestle.
Mm-hmm. And that's the thing is like, you always want to make it look like a challenge. You always want to make it like competitive and entertaining. Like every match can't be a squash.
No. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Do you remember wrestling Ken Shamrock in like the late 80s, early 90s?
I wrestled him. He came to Greensboro Coliseum. Yeah. It was a house show. Jack Lanza was the agent. Jack Lanza comes up to me and he says, now, he wasn't Ken Shamrock. He was Vince Tortello, if I'm saying it right.
Yeah.
Look good. He says, why don't you bump this kid around? And then you have a match with him. Bump him around. See if he could bump. And then defeat him with a small package. I said, okay. I think we were a dark match. We were on first or second. And that was it. He was very nice. Never saw him after that until I see him in 94 and at the Manhattan Center when WWF joined forces with ECW at the Manhattan Center. Mm-hmm. And
which is a great angle.
I was just sitting in folding chairs. I was there early. He says, oh, I got to go back to the hotel and tell my wife I'm going to be signing with them. I'm signing with them. And I guess he stayed a year or two, and then they put the Intercontinental title on him. And I don't think I ever worked with him, but I liked that match and always talked to him and haven't talked to him since and haven't heard from him or nothing. And then I ran into somebody at a meet and greet a couple of years ago, said that either their agent or they take care of him. And I did a video and sent it to Ken and still never heard nothing. So I don't know. Huh. Maybe he's still mad at me because I beat him with a small package. I don't know.
That's wild, though, because like he is another guy who, you know, you take his career outside of WWF and look what he did in the UFC, and then look what he was capable of in the WWF. Like, that transition was another guy who just really, I mean, he obviously wasn't the promo that Kurt Angle was, but he definitely took to the business pretty damn well. And
he did. You're right.
And he was incredible to watch. And because another one like Brock Lesnar, you could believe him.
Right. What I didn't like was one time, well, considered a source on this statement. I was watching UFC. I'm a big fan of it. I love anything motivational. I watch the Olympics. I watch the NFL. But I like behind-the-scenes stories. I like when they're, after a good workout, they're going to eat and talk about strategy and weight training and stretching and anything athletic gets my attention. But I saw a promo by Tito Ortiz, and he was knocking, of course, Shamrock, and probably part of it was shoot, part of it was hype. But he says, Ken Shamrock, you're nothing but a pro wrestler. Okay. That was just ignorant. And second, so are you, dude. You were in TNA.
I'd be like, yeah, but before he did that, what else was he? I mean, this is a guy who, and there's some people you just like, imagine saying that to, you know, to someone like Taker or something like that, too. I bet you get your ass knocked out real quick.
Yeah.
Oh wow, that's
that's
really funny. What was WCW like when you first were in there, 1990, then compare that going back in 97, 2000. What was the behind the scenes stuff like between those two runs there?
Well, the 91 was laid back. The 97 was more, we're competing. And I was on Nitros and Thunders, Saturday night, Halloween Havoc. And all of a sudden, they just wanted me for Saturday night, but my pay was the same. So I was wrestling less and getting the same. So it wasn't nothing personal. I don't know. It was, I don't know if it was Bischoff or, well, it was definitely Bischoff and Vince Russo, the demise. And, you know, Ted Turner having enough, I'm assuming all this, allegedly. And, I think it's a shame because it was going good. They were traveling good. They had money. I mean, the catering was good. The airline tickets, they avoided. There was so much problem with the plane tickets and getting a hold of us. They bought everybody a fax machine, a Brother fax machine, and sent it to their house. And they would send us faxes. We didn't have to pay for the fax machine.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It was pretty cool. I mean, that's really wild. And Yeah, I enjoyed things. I think it was a little bit, you know, it was definitely WWF was more you know, just more bang for the buck, so to speak.
Yeah, yeah. And I mean, did it feel more coherent and organized backstage at WWF, or is it just both of them are kind of chaotic because that's professional wrestling?
No, I think it was more articulate and just more personified, diversified, in order, whatever you want to call it. It was pretty spot on and pretty tightened up the rules. The only thing is, you know, the ribbing and stuff like that, which, come on, grow up, guys.
Yeah, it seems like that's...
I'm trying to get my match under control. Like, you go to Japan, when I worked for All Japan, no ribbing and that stuff. I'm not into that. I don't put it over. I'm not a stooge. I'm not going to... It was the time, but I don't think they do that crap anymore.
Yeah, it seems like, I mean, it would be very hard this day and age. And when it does happen, you hear about it pretty quickly, a la JBL ribbing Mauro Ranallo, and Mauro Ranallo immediately being like, I'm not dealing with this bullshit, and going back to announcing boxing. You know,
is that what happened?
Yeah, that was like one of the first times he left NXT.
Mauro Ranallo. I know him from Pride.
Yeah.
Let me tell you something. When I think of announcers, of course, this is just my personal, I mean, I love Gordon Solie.
Yep.
Okay. But when I think of breaking it down, being entertaining, in my eyes, Jim Ross is the best.
He's incredible. Yeah.
Tony Schiavone is good.
Schiavone's great.
But the other gentleman with the, what is his name?
The one is Michael Cole, the guy who does it all now.
Oh, no, not at all. No, not when he called a cradle and it was supposed to be a backslide. No, I don't have, you know, the masked man for All Elite.
Oh, God. Yeah. You got me there. I can't remember.
It's got one word.
Yeah. Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about.
Let me tell you something. He's good.
Yeah.
He's good.
You like him?
I like him, and I like that there's three people, and I like that there's a masked man at the desk. It's pretty cool.
Huh. See, my biggest thing with that is like they never really explained who he was.
Like you're
there was
right.
never there was never a
yeah,
point where
right.
like why is this guy why is he wearing a mask?
You know, I thought about that. You are right. Good point.
That was my only issue.
They could always explain it. We want to tell you who, and I forgot his friggin' name.
Excalibur. Hi. There it is.
What is it?
Excalibur, the sword guy.
Excalibur.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And they could run a 2-minute piece. I mean, they run a 2-minute piece on Darby Allin every other week.
Yeah, I don't get it. I don't really watch much AEW. They lost me after a while. They had me hooked in the beginning. One match. It only took one match to get me fully hooked on them. And that
What's
was
that?
The Dustin versus Cody Rhodes. Dustin Rhodes versus Cody Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
I think it was the first pay-per-view they did. It was the All In or something like that. And they had a match, and Dustin got busted open. He just got incredible. I mean, it was just incredible. There was blood everywhere. It was
really?
one of the few times that you see one of these matches and you're just like fully in 100%. The story is two brothers just trying to see which one's the best, because like, you know, because everybody knows the story of Dusty, you know, everyone knows the story that, you know, he likes Cody a little bit more. And so there was always this competition, and it was just a great story, an in-ring, and they just knocked it out of the park. Afterwards, they have a moment where Cody invites him to be on the roster and like be part of AEW. I think Dustin genuinely thought it was his last match. And it was just like, it was just a great, great match. And I was like, if this is the kind of stuff they're going to do, then I'm all in.
Right.
You know, no pun intended, but I'm all in. And
right.
And they do a lot of stuff that just loses me.
Yeah. Certain things I could critique if I was an agent or if I'm correcting certain things, and it doesn't mean I'm right. I could be wrong, but maybe I'm right too. Yeah. And as far as Dustin, probably the best I've ever seen him look and the best he's ever worked. Because when I knew him and he was 25 and new as Goldust, he was all over the place.
He could work.
Yeah, settle down. Settle yeah. down.
Yeah, that's one of the things I was talking about recently is just how good he looks in AEW. Like he's like slimmer than he's ever been. He's in great shape. His cardio is obviously better than it's ever been. Sure. You know, like there was never a point where you looked at him and it was just like, this guy can't work. You know, like right. he always like had it. It just was like there was a long period where you felt like he wasn't really trying. He was just,
yeah, I hear you.
You know, it's kind of like Randy Orton sometimes where like, oh, you know, this guy is probably one of the best in the business right now.
And, I totally agree.
And you see him go in the ring sometimes and you're like, you're not trying. Like you could tell he just doesn't care that much. And then other times when he's into the match and he's putting it in, it's just like, this is like some of the most incredible work I've ever seen.
Sure. And, yeah. Rewinding to Mauro Anello. Yeah, the guy is phenomenal. And when I used to hear him on Pride, Isaac, I said, he needs to be in pro wrestling. Mm-hmm. And he did. I don't know where he is at now.
Last I saw, I think he's doing Showtime boxing.
Really?
Yeah, he's doing like the professional boxing again, on Showtime.
Once again, WWF ruins a gimmick or lets somebody go, like Pac, me. There's a plethora of others that,
so many.
And then some need to go, believe me, especially if they're breaking the rules and they can't put two syllables together or wrestle a lick. I mean, you know, but yeah, I didn't know that JBL, I know he was a bully. I don't care for the guy, but I think he's got his clock cleaned and maybe he's just brain dead from Bart Gunn smashing him in the face.
Oh, man. That must have been one you were glad you avoided, huh?
Oh, yeah.
Well, did you get offered the Brawl for All?
I wasn't there.
You weren't there at that point. Oh, you were gone in 95, right?
No, I left in 97.
Okay. I thought you were there for the Brawl for All still.
Maybe. I don't think so.
Okay. No, I could be easily mistaken. My dates. You probably know better than me. You'd probably remember that insanity if you were around for it.
Yeah.
Oh my goodness, man.
Yeah.
What was the working with Chris Candido like, and what was that whole run like when they finally sort of? I mean, he's talk about a great in ring worker. Chris Candido,
very good. Just. Almost like we're made for each other. I mean, always had fun, always had good ideas. He never complained. I got to say, I have no negative anything about Chris. He was so polite, so respectful. He did some cool stuff. He had good ideas. I loved working the angle and program with him.
Great matches.
Great chemistry.
Yeah.
You know, forget about Sonny. It was all about Chris in my eyes. And it was just, he told me one time, he says, Barry, he says, I don't know why that Paul Heyman don't book you. I don't know if Paul likes me, and forget him, I'm Jewish and he's Jewish. I don't know about him and I really don't care. But Chris said, I was working ECW, walking to the ring and they were chanting your name.
That's awesome.
How about it's a no-brainer, book us then, Paul? Or do you want to get even with me for something he just I really knows, don't know about?
He just knows that you'd want to make sure that check cleared, man. he didn't want to have to deal with that fight.
yeah, really. Yeah, I don't need that.
Did you have any issues with Sonny? I mean, you said that you were focused on Chris, but okay.
No, I'm saying focused because it was the wrestling and she was good eye candy and whatnot, but when it came to wrestling and everything, it came down to him and I.
Yeah, yeah.
That's absolutely. All.
Okay, yeah, I wasn't sure if that was like a statement where you're saying like, yeah, I don't care about all the bullshit she caused. Because I know she has
past is really credits. Hardcore. And to this day, it's hardcore. And I mean, she's following the wrong crowd.
Yeah, but all credit where credit's due. She was very good at what she did.
Yes, absolutely.
And that's the thing is, like, you know, I mean, she was very young at the time, and I could see why something like that would really, if you don't have a firm grasp on who you are and what your morals and what your guide, like what guides you, like I could see how being that young, that successful in that time period could really lead to a place where she's at now.
It is. So yeah, it's easier from the outside to look in, but we don't know what's looking out.
Yeah. That's so true, man. Absolutely. So true. And I feel like there's a lot of demons to be had in that business.
Definitely.
Because, you know, it's not an easy business to be in. You know, you have to be pretty fucking tough if you want to make it.
Yeah. And I don't know all the demons. I don't know him personally, but what I seen with Kurt Angle, you got to give the guy props for fighting the demons.
Mm-hmm.
I just saw something recently a couple days ago on YouTube that he's got a problem with the iron neck. It's a problem. It's called, and he's in pain all day.
Yeah, and he has trouble turning his neck.
Well, it's amateur wrestling all his life and pro wrestling and some of the stuff he did with Shane McMahon. I mean, brutal, brutal things. And he says, I'm not going back to, he says,
that
I'm not
King
going
of the
back
ring
to
match.
Yeah. He says, I'm not going back to painkillers. He says, it'll kill me. He says, I just got to keep on working out, which is true because my chiropractor even tells me, he says, I can't believe the shape you're in at your age and what you're doing. He says, I can't get over that. He says, because when he stretches my hamstrings and so forth, the angle and stuff, he says, this isn't normal. I said, well, I just credit for, you know, taking care of myself. I don't do any demons. And, you know, I'm a sports nutritionist. And as far as nutrition and training and whatnot, it's paying off for me in my later years. So,
yeah, that's awesome.
I do have injuries.
Yeah, of course. I mean, you can't, I work as a chef and I have injuries and I don't fall down and get thrown around for a living. So I can only imagine. But when you talk about, you know, like those kind of things where you know, like Kurt Angle and that coming back from those demons, and you look at, you know, I know DDP doesn't have like the same, you know, the same problems, but he was helping people like Scott Hall and Jake Roberts. And you look at some of those transformations, and, you know, I know that both of those guys, Jake and Scott, both have, you know, there's very mixed opinions on both of them, which rightfully so, considering that, you know, they acted very selfishly for a long time. But at the same time, you know, as a professional wrestling fan, to see Scott Hall basically being carried out to the ring by, you know, because he's so drunk and fucked up on painkillers that he can't walk, you know, seeing him go from that, you know, which is incredibly sad, because at that point everybody thought, you know, it's like, what, you know, you're just waiting for the news report that he's passed away, and to go from that and be able to, you know, ensure there's stumbles, but to be able to go from that, now he's in the Hall of Fame twice, you know, and like, you
and
know,
Barry's sitting at home.
Yeah, exactly. But yeah, no, like, but those kind of things, like, you know, it's good to see, like, there are people. And one thing I give respect to WWE for these days is like their willingness to help out with drug treatment for people and things like that, because I think that's incredibly important. And it's not so prevalent as, you know, today, as far as like the current talent. But I mean, you know, you go back a generation and further, and, you know, I'm sure you saw plenty in those locker rooms that, you know, that if a DEA agent walked in on, there would be a lot of trouble.
Yeah, so. I just left the locker room. I don't want no part of that. It's none of my business. I don't care, and I don't want any part of it.
Yeah. You know, like you said, you were a professional.
Yeah. Yes.
I have a couple of quick questions to close out here, and then I want you to talk a little bit about what you're doing these days and what you got going on. I have a good friend, Dennis Day Jr. He's got a podcast, What Do You Say with DDJ? He's one of our correspondents on Such Good Shoot. And he wanted to know, he just usually asks a couple of questions. He wanted to talk you to talk a little bit about your SummerSlam 95 match with Chris. And what you thought of that match, and, you know, like any special memories from that at all.
I thought the match was excellent. I love that building, the Pittsburgh Civic Arena, aka the Igloo. I mean, they filmed the Van Damme movie Sudden Impact right there. It wasn't a set. They really filmed it there.
Wow.
And I like Pittsburgh. I like the town, the food, the setup there was always nice. The hotels, the airport, the old one, the new one. And it was, you know, it was packed. I sold a t-shirt there live on the pay-per-view. And we really did have a good match. And I mean, it was basically flawless in my eyes.
Yeah,
I mean,
it was a really good one.
When I was done with that match, I normally, you know, I can get undressed and all that. I couldn't come off the natural, organic high of that match for an hour. 1 hour. Wow. Yeah.
Wow. Those are those moments that it all makes it worthwhile for it too, when everything falls into place.
Well, it does, Isaac, when you've got two good artists, two good workers that get the match over.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, that's why there's
no egos.
Yeah.
Let's have fun.
Yeah. Some of the best matches are guys that are going out there and like just trying to, you know, make each other look as good as possible. You know, like you think that's of some the of the Stone Cold and The Rock together. Like that was it. It's like they both knew how big they both were. And they both knew that the more they did to make each other look tough, the tougher each one looked.
Sure.
And so, and like, And when you have that chemistry, it really does make for an incredible match.
Yeah.
And you mentioned your t-shirt. What was it like finally getting your own t-shirt with them?
That was cool. I was surprised. I liked the way they did it. I liked everything about it. I liked the presentation. I liked everything. I mean, whoever designed it was awesome and it was cool. I was proud to be part of it.
I love my Barry Horowitz shirt. I just got to say, I'm a big fan. So. Yep. And if you want to get a Barry Horowitz shirt too, you can go to prowrestlingtees.com/Barry Horowitz. The link is right down here. Please go check
them
out.
There.
There's some really cool ones. I'm going to be checking them out once payday hits. and I would love if you just take a second. I know you've got some really exciting things coming up, but you have a micro brawler, right?
Yeah,
share what you got going on, man. I'm really excited.
Yeah, he's basically a pint size all-star. He's a good looking dude, well built. And what's really cool about this, does a little bio on the back of me and how to get in touch with the company who made it. It was made in California. Took about a year to get this done. And what I like about it, it's different, it's affordable, it's small. But what's really is huge in the next year is from Zombie Sailor, that they're making the 90s Hasbro figure of myself, Dino Bravo, the Rock and Roll Express. That will be done in a year. I'm very excited about that. And as far as my life, I mean, I'm a certified sports nutritionist, but I'm doing a lot of meet and greets. I just came back from Seattle, New York. I'm off to Pennsylvania. I'm off to upstate New York. I'm going to California, and I'm excited. The WWE did a documentary of me in December, which was supposed to premiere in June, but according to the creative powers, it was either an hour or 2 hours that's pushed back because of the Peacock thing.
Of course.
So you don't know when it's going to show, but it will show. And awesome. Then I've got some from an LA producer that wants to do a documentary on me. And hopefully he'll be coming down to Florida in a few months. And that's going to be huge because he's going to work on it for 2 years. It would premiere at probably SoFi Stadium for WrestleMania in LA.
Wow.
So that's huge. My meet and greets. And of course my hands-on seminars. I'm teaching young talent, the Malenko way, not the Horowitz way or both. The Malenko's both, way, the way I was taught and in and out of the ring. It's not all about trunks, get in the ring, grab a headlock, do a high spot. It's about conducting yourself as a professional in and out of the ring. The little intricate things that make a good worker go into a great worker. I try to push that, you know, big time. As far as, that and the podcast, the interviews. And again, like I said, the seminars, the meet and greets. I'm doing everything but wrestling, but my ultimate goal and my legacy before I leave this business completely is to be a coach for a major company. I think I have a lot. My resume speaks for itself. I have a lot to give. I don't want to take over. All I want to do is make the stew taste better.
Yeah.
I don't want to take nobody's spot. I don't want to do any of that. And if I do, I'm sorry. I'm just outwitted you. I don't know what to say, you know, because some of these guys that are in the school, I'm not knocking them, but I could teach them. I mean, I don't know where they came from, what they did, but I don't know why they're there teaching. I really don't. Some, not all. And it perplexes me. I really don't know that. And I don't know. Maybe I've got this unforeseen heat I don't know about. So,
yeah, I haven't heard anything. Where can we find information about where you're going to be for signings and things like that?
Oh, yeah, that's huge. That's Facebook. That's okay. YouTube. The ProWrestlingTees.com. Cameo.com is huge. It's doing well for me. Nice. I mean, I'm doing really good. I'm liking Cameo. That a lot. So there's a lot of that. And of course, Facebook, big nice. Time. And nice. If you search, awesome. You Google Barry Horowitz, I mean, a plethora of stuff comes up.
Cool. Well, we'll keep an eye out for you when you come around our areas. And
yeah.
You know,
Where are you from again?
I'm in Vermont. So
okay, I've wrestled Vermont, but I'm sorry, I've wrestled Burlington.
Yeah.
But you know something about Vermont? You could tell a guy from Vermont, but you can't tell him much.
That's true, man. You know why birds fly upside down over our state, right?
What's that?
You know why birds fly upside down over our state?
No.
Ain't nothing worth shitting on.
Oh man, wow.
Oh, there we go. Well,
yes.
I really, really genuinely appreciate this opportunity to talk to you. I appreciate your time and everything you've put into the wrestling business for my personal entertainment and also the entertainment of millions and millions of other people. A lot of us, my childhood was awesome because I did get to see you wrestle as a kid.
Oh, thanks. And I got to give a real shout out to my fans. My new fans that know what's going on, they support me, and I appreciate that. And I'm not working them or nothing. When you come to the meet and greets, when you send me fan mail to my personal home, I appreciate that. And they mean what they say and say what they mean, because there's nothing to BS me for. I'm not handing them out money or anything. I think they truly, really mean it. And yeah. If I couldn't say that 20 years ago, because the situation with fans and marks was different.
Yeah. Well, it's nice to, you know, to get that recognition still and have people that are continuing to say, hey, you're memorable to me and you made an impact on my life, you know, and that's an awesome place to be.
That I swear to you, and I swear this must be every other person. Why aren't you a coach and how come you're not in the Hall of Fame? Why aren't I a coach and why aren't I in the Hall of Fame? Well, the only thing, I'll just give it quick, ask Vince.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
I don't know.
I've learned that those questions, there's always one answer to that. And it's, you know, there's one person who makes those decisions on that company. And, you know, there'll be a point where that changes.
I'm hoping Peacock changes it for me, but I'll tell you what, and whatever, I'm confident in myself. You're missing a good opportunity if you don't employ me. I mean that.
I believe it, man. I mean, seeing you work, seeing your passion for the business, the eye you have for a match, and, you know, just what you could bring to these young kids in terms of, you know.
All they got to do is try me and listen.
Yeah, and it's a question of just having somebody who's a link between the old school and the new school, you know, and help.
Right. And I'm a little bit of both.
Yeah, and help continue that tradition. And I think that would be a great fit. And, you know, I wish you all the best in that. And I would love
to see
your name listed in the Hall of Fame one of these days. And I would love to see you as a coach and mentor to some of these young guys. Cause
yeah,
I think it would be a great benefit.
Never say never in the wrestling business.
Nope. Hell no. Yeah. Awesome, man. Well, from us here at Such Good Shoot, we're part of the Johnners Podcasting Network. We are super, super excited to have you. I really appreciate your time.
And thank you.
And please, if everybody can go check out Barry's Facebook page and go buy a t-shirt.
Yeah, I think I'm going to rename if I get a podcast, I'm going to rename it Just a She Is It.
on that note, I'm going to say shalom. Thank you so much. Shalom. For
Thank
us,
you.
Man.
Thank you, Mr. Lonsman.
Fuck.